Oh, good, Beth said. Danny didn't make a mess of things. I hate having to clean up after him all the time. That was third person. But didn't you feel like you were in her head? Oh, good. There's her emotion, her internal dialogue. Danny didn't mess up things. I know what she thinks about Danny and what expectations she has on him, and I know how Danny usually behaves. I hate having to clean up after him all the time. This girl's got an attitude, at least about how Danny treats the kitchen. You know the character a little bit now, and if I do that long enough for a chapter, you'll start to feel Beth's thoughts. You'll start to feel like Beth. You'll start to sympathize with Beth, and you'll start to have a little attitude about Danny, too. If it's done right and it's done consistently enough, you can kind of become Beth and get lost in the story, and that's when you have to keep turning the pages, when you become the character. And that can happen in deep third point of view. So how do you write this? Well, I've got four main sorts of things that you would work into your writing to get deep third person. The first one is choose the one person in the story who is most important, the person that you want your readers to feel for or feel with, the main character. Choose who that's going to be. And there's a lot of options. And you're going to have a writing exercise where you work with that, and you pick a scenario where you write a scene from one person's point of view and flip completely into another person's point of view. You could even tell a story from the bad guy's point of view if you want to help somebody feel, like, let's say you could tell Judas's story from Judas's point of view. What was it like to go through what he went through? Maybe we never thought about that. Maybe we'll sympathize a little bit more with people who are suffering with the things that Judas suffered with, if we could get into his head for a little while and see things from his point of view. Okay, so the first thing is choose one character and stick with it. Mostly, there are really amazing writers that can do several points of view this way. Generally, you and me are not those writers. And I'm not saying that you particularly aren't, but I've never quite gotten to where I could pull off a lot of characters. The closest I came was in Somewhere in the Skies, where I had a family that died. I had five main characters, basically, all told from the point of view of the grandmother, a sixth main person, except this grandma wasn't at any of the scenes that the story took place. So she's got five of her family members die. It's her story. But I got to be able to get to the scenes of the deaths, and to do that, I need to get into the heads of all five people. That was tough. Toughest project I ever took on. I wouldn't want to write like that a lot. And there's some rules I'll give you for doing that, for when you do need to pull in another character, how can you change to make sure you don't confuse your reader? But generally, if you tell a story from one person's point of view, you'll draw your readers in and hang on to them. Okay, the second thing, and Stephanie alluded to this as well, don't tell anything that your main character can't see, hear, or feel. So go back to imagining it's yourself. You walk into the kitchen, and you notice that it's not a mess. If you're in the kitchen and the laundry room's over there, you can't see the laundry room. So this wouldn't really be good in a scene at all. I walked into the kitchen and I thought, oh good, Danny didn't make a mess, but he sure did trash the laundry room. Well, I can't see the laundry room. Or I wouldn't say, little did Becky know that he had trashed the, because I can't see that. If we do that in our writing, the person, you pull the reader out of the person's head. So you kind of picture yourself in the scene. That's actually how I write these sorts of scenes. I make myself the character. Even if it's a guy, I kind of become that guy for a while. For a few months I'm a guy and my family thinks I'm having mental problems. But I really become that guy and I start thinking like him and doing like, I found myself buying a Mountain Dew one time and I don't even like Mountain Dew, but my character likes Mountain Dew. So get into that character so that when you write, you can write his way. And if you stay there in one character, you can do that pretty effectively. So don't tell anything that he wouldn't know. Another one that he wouldn't know is, let's say, I've got some examples here. Here, if you've got a character named Beth and she walks in and she hears someone in the shower. Okay, so she walks into the house, you tell about that, and she hears the shower. Probably Danny upstairs. Okay, but you wouldn't do this. Little did Beth know that Danny was taking a shower at that very moment. Well, she doesn't know. So how can she know? So if you know and she doesn't know, you're one up on her. That's an omniscient narrator. That's a whole other kind of point of view. And it's easy to flop between the two. So you got to kind of watch that you leave that stuff out. There's a place for that kind of writing. If you're Tolkien and you're creating an entire world with lots of people and lots of events and lots of places, you're going to want that omniscient sort of looking from above the world at everybody. But if you've got your one little Mennonite character who's doing their one little adventure, your reader will enjoy coming on down into their world and living it for a little while. Another common mistake, if Beth walks in and something that Beth couldn't know, goes like this. Danny watched from the top of the stairs as Beth closed the door and slowly turned around. "Oh, you're home," she gasped. Who's seeing that scene? Danny's watching, so I'm in his head, and now she turns around and says, "Oh, you're home," and she gasps. And as a reader, I don't know who I am. Am I Danny or am I Beth? That's confusing. And I'll read you a scene in a little bit that's really, really, really confusing, but not yet. Okay, so that's the first thing is choose a single character and stick with it. The second is don't tell anything that that character can't see, hear, feel, or somehow experience. Third thing, this is a technique you can use. You want to write a scene. You want to get it to feel really deep. Write it for yourself first. So start with first person. This is a little clumsy, but this works, especially if you're training yourself to do deep third. Start with first person point of view. Okay, so I went to the Writers and Artists Conference, and I walked in and I saw 75 people scattered around the room, and I wondered, why do those people always sit in the back like that? Okay, so there you go. I don't know. And I wrote that from my point of view. Now let's say I need to make that my character. What's your name?
Sarah.
Okay, so Sarah. Sarah's my main character. And all I have to do now, assuming I've built Sarah kind of like me, I say, Sarah walked into Writers and Artists Conference and got up to the front and saw 75 people and thought, why do those people sit way back there? Okay, so it's the same thing. Instead of I experiencing it, Sarah's experiencing it now. But I told that pretty close to how I would tell it in first person. And when you're in there, you don't have to keep saying, she said, she thought. I didn't tell you Sarah thought that. Maybe I did there, but I don't have to. You can just put her thought right there on her head. Sarah walked into Writers and Artists Conference, got to the front. Maybe she's a little nervous. She puts her hands in her pocket and she finds her keys and she jingles. Oh, I better not do that. And she looks out over the room. Man, how come those people are sitting way back there? And then you just keep going on. Her thought can just kind of come out, and you don't always have to say, Sarah thought, Sarah said, Sarah this, Sarah the other, because you are Sarah. When you're writing deep third, you are Sarah. The narrator kind of becomes that person. That's the third thing. Start with first, but replace it with your character. And the fourth is, and this is the fun part, especially if you gals want to become guys and the guys want to become gals for a little while. All right, you want to become a child, or you want to become your bishop, whoever your main character is. Yeah, you can be all these people. You can be a hot rod, horse driving buggy person if you've never been one. I grew up in the city, so that sounds like it would be a little interesting. But so you can become those people for a little while, getting into their head and writing from their point of view. But if you do that, you better learn how they tick. You would never believe I'm an old order. I don't have the accent. I don't have the vocabulary. I don't talk slow enough. I say that in honor of all my old order friends. I don't know what they eat. I don't know what it's like to even hold the reins. How does a horse act? I don't know. I'm afraid of horses. So I wouldn't pull that scene off until I went and learned a lot about what it's like to ride in a buggy. I'd have to go to one of my friends and say, hey, can I ride in your buggy? Hey, can I hold those reins? I want to see what this is like. Do you mind if I take a ride by myself? They probably wouldn't let me go. So in order to get your readers to believe you're that person as you're writing them, you got to kind of get in there in your head. So here's an example of that. You've got a child going to school, first day of school, six-year-old, first day of first grade. Let's say his name is Bill. So Bill walks in, and this is what Bill says on the first day of school. This is the same scene I'm going to paint two ways. The room was big and scary, and I didn't know which cubby was mine. Okay, that's about how, I think, in my imagination, a six-year-old would look, think, feel, and talk when he first experienced that overwhelming sensation of finding himself lost in the first grade classroom. But his mother says, The look on Tommy's face about broke my heart. How could I abandon him to all those strangers? Same scene. Mom's point of view. Her language is different. Her sentence structure is different. The way her thoughts work is different. Her sentences are longer. They've got commas and parenthetical phrases. Not the little guy. I mean, his is right there out front. I don't even know which cubby is mine. I don't even know what a cubby is. You know, so get down there in his point of view. If you're writing a children's story, become a child and just see things from down here, right? So like you guys in the back, see, now you can't see me back there. The little guy can't see them either. So there's things he will not experience. If I wrote Billy's story from up here and I talked about all the people in the back of the room, I will have just made a mistake because Billy doesn't know anybody's back there at all. There's just this big wall of people. And so maybe that's how it looks to Billy. So to get into that person's head, use their vocabulary. Be aware of gender, how differently guys and gals speak. So the girl, she's going to say it three times, slightly different variation each time, but the same content three times, pretty much three. And then he's just going to pause and listen. And maybe he's waiting for his turn to talk, and maybe she doesn't give him a chance, or maybe he just doesn't have a whole lot to say. So when he finally responds, he'll say something like, uh-huh. And she just gave him three paragraphs, and he says, uh-huh. So most of your guys, you don't want like paragraphs of dialogue from them. And the guys and the girls, they need to be different because guys and girls are different. Now, it doesn't mean we're all stereotypically of that way, but your character's going to either be long-winded or short-winded. They're going to use slang or they're going to use formal language. If it's a college professor, he's going to speak one way, and if it's a mom at home, it's going to be, you can picture the difference there. The college professor would like to use the restroom, and the mom needs to find the potty fast. Okay, so change your vocabulary and the way you say things depending on who you have. And the last, those are the four things for writing. And before we get into a writing exercise for you, I'm going to talk a little bit about this head-hopping thing that I talked about, this idea of I'm this person, then I'm this person, then I'm this person. Very confusing, and that's the thing that drives me nuttiest when I read our books, because it happens way more than I think it should. A lot of our books would never make it through one of the world's publishers. It would be thrown out immediately because it's very confusing to hop around among different characters, and we're not really well-trained in that. We haven't gone to writing school. We haven't had the opportunity to learn these techniques. If you want to learn them and you go get resources, they're filled with all kinds of garbage from their point of view and the things they write about. Well, you don't want to do a lot of that. So where do you learn this stuff? So we teach each other. But here's the stuff I've learned about head hopping. Okay. In general, like I said, stick in one person's head. But sometimes you do need to have multiple characters. I can think of three situations where you might legitimately need to very carefully craft some other points of view. The first one is in a book like Somewhere in the Skies, where your main character can't be there often for the action, somehow you're going to have to work in that letting your readers experience the scene. You don't want to have everything told to grandma. Somehow you got to paint that scene so your readers can be there. And so you're going to need some other points of view for that. And the other two very commonly accepted, even in secular publishing, is romances in a romance. And yes, Mennonites do have romances. They're just not steamy. We do have guys and girls meeting. And if you've got a guy and a girl meeting and you want a little flutter going on or whatever, you've got to get inside the head. Now, her flutter is different than his flutter. And as a reader, you want to experience both flutters. So you're going to have to do a little head hopping there, and I'll tell you how you can do that. But for a little while, you know, she notices that he's got on that cologne again. And so she moves farther over to her side of the door because that's just like just really wonderful. And so he's over here and he notices she has on that pretty blue dress, and he's all thinking about that and his thoughts about pretty blue dresses or something. That was pretty cliche. But there's a time where you would like to experience both. A romance is a book from two points of view. Another one that is from two points of view, and we don't write a lot of these, and I'm glad, but if you got a good guy and a bad guy, like a detective story or a police officer chasing a thief, some of those books, it's well told. If you want to see what the bad guy's doing as the police, let's say he's setting a bomb, okay, and they're trying to get to him before the bomb goes off. Well, The police officer can't see the bomb being set, but you want your reader's heart to thump a little bit. The time's running out, and there's only 5 minutes, so you need to get into the room where the bomb is and see it for a little bit, just so you can see the clock ticking. In order to do that, you got to go into the bomber's head just for a little while. Not too deep, not too long. You don't want a lot of deep third person in a criminal's head. But just a peek, now and then, can keep a book like that going. Or if somebody's chasing somebody, there can be two good people, and one is chasing the other for some other reason, and you're either hoping he catches them or hoping he gets away. You might have both points of view there. Those are times you might use some head hopping. If you do, if you need to switch points of view, make it very, very, very clear and only do it once, like once in a chapter. And you do it at a scene break. So here's how you would do that. Let's say we've got Billy and his mom, and it's kindergarten morning or first grade. So I think in a story like that, I'd probably start with mom because I'm a mom. So I would walk in and I'd read you that part about how my heart's about broken. I can't believe I'm leaving him and all the guilt I'm feeling. And I'm ready to go out in the hallway and cry, which is what I did when my daughter went on the bus her first day of school. But I didn't do it while she was there. So you wait till you get out of the room, then you have your cry. And while you paint that whole scene that mom's going through so your reader can feel that and can feel for mom. But Billy's back in the room. So you end the scene with mom with some really good summary sort of thought or her last tear or something. You break. You don't say, meanwhile, back at the ranch. But you just say, you break, you give a little space, maybe you skip an extra line or something, and you start your next sentence with Billy. Let them know you're switching heads. Always let them know you're about to switch heads. In that first sentence, close to the front of the first sentence, start with that character you're about to switch to. So if you just leave a gap and then you say, Billy was crying. He looked around the room and saw the wall of people. Whatever his reaction is there. You would have no trouble then. A reader wouldn't have any trouble making that switch back into Billy. But you don't want to then give Billy two sentences and hop back out into mom. That's the head hopping. If you're going to switch to Billy, make it a good clean cut, finish out your chapter with Billy, or at least give him a segment, and then move on. Okay, so those little bits, mom out in the hallway and Billy in the classroom, those are called scenes. You get one person per scene. One point of view per scene. So if it's time to switch to another person, other than a romance or a spy novel, change the scene. Put them on the other side of the door. Do something that's really clear to the reader so they don't get confused. Okay, now I'm going to deliberately confuse you. Okay, this is from the book Somewhere in the Skies. That was the one that I had to have several characters. And I edited this, or I unedited it, to put you in lots of people's head. Actually, this scene was written from one person's point of view, and I'll give you that at the end. But here it's changed to be in the heads of all the people in the scene. I hope you're thoroughly confused. I hope you see this is terrible writing. It was actually difficult to make it this bad. But okay. So Phyllis set her Bible on the dashboard, and she positioned her seatbelt in a way that wouldn't wrinkle her dress. Ah, that felt better. Now you know whose head you're in, right? You're in Phyllis's. She's feeling good that the seatbelt's good, and her dress isn't getting wrinkled, and she's going to look all right when she gets to church. Thanks for hurrying, Scott said. I want to drop this book off at Harold's place on the way to church. It shouldn't take too long. Harold's wife, Beth, was coming from the dairy when Scott pulled into their lane. It had been nice milking with him again, but she had supper to get on the table. Scott kept the van running as he jumped out the door with the book in his hand. Here's that book I was telling Harold about, he said. Just as Scott was about to show Beth the chapter that had excited him, Harold himself came out of the barn and was pleasantly surprised to see his old friend parked in his driveway. Hey, Harold, Scott greeted him enthusiastically. I brought you that book. Could you feel that hopping? That was bad. Okay, that was really bad writing. And I did that, okay? So that was Becky McGurran's bad writing. So you're no worse than me, that's for sure. In a scene like that, and Somewhere in the Skies has a lot of scenes like that because the family was often together, in each scene I had to decide who's going to be the one main character in this scene. Who's got the most to tell in this scene? And then I had to pick that one. So this particular scene was really Scott's scene because Scott was the one who had this chapter he wanted to share with his friend. It was his enthusiasm. It wasn't about Phyllis's dress. It wasn't about Harold's wife, whatever her name was, coming out of the barn and because she likes milking with her husband. We don't even know who she is. She popped up on this page and then she disappears again. So nobody really cares that she likes milking with her husband. That's unimportant. But it's important that Scott is excited to share this wonderful gem he just found with his friend. And so here's how the scene was written in the final edition. Phyllis set her Bible on the dashboard and positioned her seatbelt in a way that wouldn't wrinkle her dress. "Thanks for hurrying," Scott said. "I want to drop this book off at Harold's place on the way to church." Harold's wife, Beth, was coming from the dairy when Scott pulled into their lane. Scott kept the van running as he jumped out the door with the book in his hand. "Here's that book I was telling Harold about," he said. Just as Scott was about to show her the chapter that had excited him, Harold himself came out of the barn where he had been feeding the cows. "Hey, Harold," Scott greeted him enthusiastically. "I brought you that book." That was a lot clearer, wasn't it? Yeah, that was all Scott. And so for a little while, we were just Scott, feeling what Scott felt, his excitement, whatever. And you weren't having to stop and think, I need to reread that and see who's doing what. Another thing that this makes a lot easier when you're in deep third person, you don't have trouble with pronouns anymore. You're not going to mess up your pronouns. In the first badly written version, I was using he and she, but it wasn't clear which he or she I was talking about because I had two she's and two he's. Can't use pronouns when you do that. But if it's Scott, mostly he's the only he. Okay? And so it's helpful there. So be kind to your readers. Stay in one character's head for a long time. And if you can pick up the habit of doing that, for most people, your writing will improve. It'll just get more engaging. Okay, so there's workshop time. That's good. This is good timing. I was hoping we had about a half hour for you to practice. I have. I'm going to pass this out too. This one is just, it's the badly written story and the goodly written story of the head hopping. So would you two please pass these out? Thank you. This is just for your reference so you can not do what I did. And this is a worksheet that I'm going to go over to tell you how we're going to do it. And could you two pass these out, please? Thank you. So once you get this worksheet, I'll go over it. You're going to need a pen or pencil. As you get it, look over those three scenarios that are there, because you'll have to pick one. And you can do the others at home, too, so it's good practice. Okay. So it says here, point of view, POV, when you see it and when your editor puts it on. If you've got one of those shorthanded editors and she keeps just jotting in your margin, POV, 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 she's letting you know you're having a problem, okay? So your point of view is switching around or something's wrong with the point of view. And this can happen, by the way, in articles as well. You're probably story writers, but if you're an article writer, you can make this mistake by saying, women who homeschool love to make homemade bread. Sometimes we find ourselves wishing we could put more nutrition in our children. I just went from women who, which are they, to sometimes we, and then maybe I'll get off and I'll start telling you about, I remember one time when I was making bread, now I'm I. That happens a lot in articles, but I'm not talking to article writers, but watch it there too. Keep your, pick your point of view and keep it. Anyway, choose one of the following scenarios. We're gonna do this in pieces. We're gonna do one character for 10 minutes, and then we're gonna have you switch and get in the other guy's head. Write the other character for whichever scenario you choose, and then if there's time, we'll try and see if you can meld the two. So choose one, write the scene first from the point of view of the first character, then rewrite the same scene, but from the point of view of the second character. Be sure to include your language style, your physical sensations that each character would experience. Remember the difference between Mom and Billy. Use different words, use different things that they see, and different things that are important to them. Spend about 10 minutes on each point of view scene. Here's your three scenarios. An employee is about to be fired by his boss. Write an internal monologue from the point of view of the employee. Include his worries, his sensations, and describe the scene as he would see and experience it. Then your second half is going to be to rewrite it from the boss's point of view. Your second option is a child receives a long-wished-for birthday present. Describe his anticipation, the unwrapping, the reaction to the gift from the point of view of the child, with age-appropriate vocabulary and sentence structure. Then rewrite the scene from the mother's point of view, or father's, or whichever, you know, whatever you are. And the third one is probably the one I would pick, because that I think I might do that when I go home. This one looks fun. Describe the experience of one of the three little pigs having his house blown in by the wolf. I've never been a pig. Sometimes I eat too much, but I've never been a pig, and I think I might like to play around with what does it feel like to be an animated soul infused pig. Okay, so my house is getting blown in by the wolf. Make the reader believe you are truly a pig in great distress. Then rewrite the scene from the wolf's point of view. There you've got one of the good guy, bad guy ones. That might be a little fun if you do write that one. On the flip side, you try and put the two together. So those will be interesting to contrast how each character saw what it was like to be the prey or to be the predator. So go ahead, spend about 10 minutes with your scenario. If I walk around, don't get nervous, I'm just a teacher. Third person deep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're trying to get this third person deep thing we were talking about. Become this character. Thank you. Okay, I'll start talking even as you finish up your last sentence or two. By the way, if some of you look really engaged in your writing, if you're liking what you're writing and you have the start to a story, story ideas are not copyrighted. So you just go ahead and finish this story someday, and maybe it'll be one of the next books that we publish here at CLP, right? Who knows? I don't know what you wrote about. Probably if you pick the Three Little Pigs, you'll need to find another publisher. Okay, so when you finish that part, go underneath, flip characters, get in that other character's head, and go ahead and write that second part. You see, you started a book. Got the folks up front here running out of paper. That's good. Keep writing. About 1 minute. Okay, we got some people finishing up, and the rest can keep working on these at home. Okay, so this is a room full of writers, right? Writers love to be published, right? Here's your chance. I want at least one volunteer from each scenario, okay? And so, yeah, I already know you're like the sort of people who like to say things because you wouldn't be writers otherwise. So you don't have to be really shy and wait a long time, because if we wait a long time, then all of a sudden we'll have 10 hands. Anyone got a long version of the Three Little Pigs? Okay.
Little Miss Piggy gives a great big sigh of contentment as she nestles down in her straw bed. She wiggles a bright pink nose and licks her lips. Lunch was good. She closes her eyes, but as she does so, an unfriendly smell wrinkles her nose. Her ears prick up and her heart gives an extra thump. No, not him, not the wolf. She leaps up with a squeal of alarm and looks out the window, where there stands the dreaded wolf, white fangs glimmering as she belts out, I'll huff and I'll blow your house down.
Okay, all right. So we feel her trembling in her bed. Let's see it from the other side.
The wolf slinks silently through the street. Aha, there is the home of the little pig. His lips curl in a toothy smile. I'm going to go blow their house down. He inches forward and braces himself outside the house.
Okay, and then I cut you off. Notice how she didn't, when she was in the wolf, and I think you didn't do this with the girl either, she didn't say he said or he thought or whatever. And I don't think the others did either. You guys were all right in your character. You did that very well. It's really tempting sometimes if you're writing one of these things to say, aha, I'm going to get my lunch, the wolf thought. But you don't have to say the wolf thought because, well, we're thinking like wolf already. So cut that stuff out. If you introduce each scene with your point of view character, regardless of what you're going to do in your scene, introduce that point of view character and run him through the whole scene using your pronouns as though he's the first person in the scene. You'll pull that off. You can drop a lot of he said, she said, he thought, she thought. All that stuff can come out. We don't stop to think in our minds in complete sentences the way our English teacher would like us. We never think this thought. I can't wait for lunch. I haven't digested anything in 4 hours, and I need something to sustain me. It's just never going to happen. Okay, it just doesn't happen in our brains. We say, man, I'm hungry. That's all. Or her stomach growled. That's really short. Or when's lunch? Will she ever finish? Okay, we also know that we're waiting for lunch if that's going on. Okay, All righty, thanks. You've been a great class.